If you're not into fish, it can be a little confusing tracking species and runs. For example, there's Chinook salmon, but there are also spring and fall runs of Chinook salmon in many rivers. It's a difference in timing, sure, but there are other differences in the fish in those two runs. And recent research shows a clear distinction. That research plays a part in the Karuk tribe announcing plans to request Endangered Species Act protection for the Klamath River spring Chinook salmon, which are very low in number these days. We had planned two guests. I'm not sure they're both here. Joshua Saxon is the Orleans District Representative on the Klamath Tribal Council. Joshua, are you with us? Craig Tucker, are you with us?
I am with us.
Craig Tucker's here. He's the Klamath Tribe Natural Resources Policy Advocate. Thank you for being with us once again.
Hey, well, thanks for having us.
So we're going to try to get Joshua back on. We lost his call for some reason. But there was that Spring Run Chinook Conference last month at Forks of Salmon, which involved, obviously, people getting in the water and looking for fish. What were the numbers like?
Well, it's pretty dismal. This run of fish, we hand count. People snorkel simultaneously various reaches of the river. It's a huge volunteer effort that's been going on for about 25 years. And unfortunately, it's easy to count them because there's just simply not that many. So we had about 110 fish counted in the surveys this year.
110 versus what are some of the historic levels?
Well, the most we've ever counted in these surveys is about 1,600 fish. But this is historically, before the era of dam building, this was the dominant run of salmon on the Klamath River, and these fish numbered in the hundreds of thousands.
And so Joshua Saxon is on with us now from the Karuk Tribal Council. I mean, there must be some great stories in Karuk tradition of vast and what appeared to be inexhaustible runs of spring Chinook.
Yeah, the significance can't be understated, especially not just in terms of the numbers of fish, but the significance of the fact that, you know, this was the first run after the wintertime. Sometimes, you know, that's exactly what we needed was, you know, a nice fat fish. There's also lamprey running at that time in the spring, and so, which is also very high fat content, and that's the kind of stuff you need when, you know, you've lived through a long winter, and you need that sustenance in the spring to get you through. And you know, this spring run is very significant to us in terms of our cultural ceremonies as well. We had a first salmon ceremony that was how, you know, we were reminded of our responsibility to these fish, and we haven't had that ceremony for several decades just because of the fact that the runs haven't been healthy enough to do that ceremony. And I know that there's also a significance to that ceremony in terms of harvest as well. That would signify the harvest for spring Chinook for upriver tribes and downriver tribes. Everyone would wait until the spring, that first salmon ceremony was done, before they would harvest fish, so that would make sure that the head of the run got up into the spawning grounds, and it was kind of a self-regulating management of the fishery that kind of started with us.
So you have to wait for the festival to be over, in a sense, for the actual fishing to begin.
That's correct.
Okay, and so you mentioned decades now of decline. Does those seem to correspond directly with the placement of dams on the Klamath River just about a century ago?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we haven't really fished for spring run fish for since the '60s, and we have a dip net fishery at Ishipishi Falls, and there's just no fish above the falls anymore. The only fish that are still remaining are the few remaining wild fish that are in the Salmon River system for us, and that's, you know, being able to know how many fish are in there, you know, is kind of why this red siren is going off. And it's been going off for a while, but, you know, in terms of the Western science finally catching up to what we've known all along, it's just recently been that kind of a development.
So Western science catching up brings us back into Craig Tucker's domain a bit more. There was a recent work out of UC Davis that showed what, Craig?
Well, for a long time it's been debated is what's the genetic difference or what makes some of these Chinook salmon come back in the fall and others come back in the spring. And for a long time, science has believed that fall fish can easily develop this spring run behavior. And so the theory goes that fish evolved into the various watersheds, and then in each watershed, something happened to trigger this spring run behavior. And so this theory goes on to say that if you killed off all the spring run in a given river, and then you did something like remove dams that provided that habitat they need, these quick fish would quickly reassume that spring run behavior. What Dr. Miller's paper shows is that's simply not true, that the genetic event or the evolutionary event that led to this spring run behavior happened 10 to 15 million years ago. It happened once in Chinook salmon and incidentally happened once in steelhead trout. And that means that if we extirpated the spring run Chinook from the Klamath, the likelihood that they'll reemerge in any time frame that's meaningful to humans is very remote. So that gives us the argument that these fish deserve some sort of special protection, and that is afforded by the Endangered Species Act.
So the essence of the response from the federal government thus far has been that, well, spring and fall Chinook, they're the same species. You're saying this research shows no, a switch was flipped 10 to 15 million years ago. They are different.
Exactly.
We are talking with Joshua Saxon and Craig Tucker. Craig Tucker is the Karuk Tribe's Natural Resources Policy Advocate. Joshua Saxon is on the Klamath Tribal Council as the Orleans District Representative. We are talking about the request for listing of spring Chinook salmon under the Endangered Species Act on the Klamath River. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Joshua, how quickly did the Tribal Council act upon getting the research from UC Davis?
Well, fairly quickly. I mean, one of the things that strategically that we look at when we analyze, you know, how we make these decisions is, you know, many times we're kind of forced into these situations just because, you know, with things that are significant to us, there are other groups that are also, you know, interested in these kinds of conservation opportunities, and we really want to be in the driver's seat in how this is kind of carried through the process of petitioning to listing, because, you know, if another group was to do this, we wouldn't have very much say in how this petition and the possible listing would affect us, whereas, and other tribes as well. And so that's why it's important to us to not only protect the resource and look at kind of what kind of restoration opportunities we have, but also be a little bit more flexible in terms of tribal harvest, not just for us, but for other tribes as well. We really do believe that, you know, we have a responsibility to harvest this fish. That's part of our culture. The fish are there for us to eat, and that's extremely important to us. And some conservation groups don't necessarily recognize that inherent right.
Really? So they do want to save the fish, but not for consumption necessarily?
That's correct.
And so had there been a request for listing previously under the Endangered Species Act, Joshua?
There was an attempt in 2011, I believe, by some groups but it was unsuccessful. The National Marine Fisheries Service denied their petition in 2011.
Go ahead, Craig.
Well, I would just say that what's really changed since 2011 is that the technology that geneticists can use to look for these genetic differences has dramatically improved. So what we have now is technology that allows scientists to basically sift through huge amounts of gene sequences, huge amounts of genetic information, and compare them, one individual animal to another, very quickly. And what this has done is allowed them to zero in on this one sequence within their genome of these fish that's different between fall run and spring run fish. And scientists just didn't have the kind of resolution even 5 years ago to do this kind of research. And interestingly, Miller finds that the genetic difference is in a gene called GREB1L. And this gene plays a role in lipid metabolism, which really makes all the sense in the world, because when spring Chinook come into the river, they're about 30% have 30% more oil in their bodies than their fall run counterparts. That's because these fish have further to go to their spawning grounds than fall run fish, so they need that energy. And it's also what makes spring Chinook highly prized by both tribal members, but also non-Indians for eating. It makes them taste much better.
And so, yeah, we discussed this when we had the folks on from the Chinook Salmon Conference last month. I mean, the fact is that because they're coming into the river in the spring when there's lots of water, they are going a lot farther.
Well, these fish would climb over 4,000 feet of elevation. These were the fish that were spawning in Oregon, upstream of Upper Klamath Lake. So they were traveling hundreds of miles and thousands of feet of elevation. So they needed that extra energy to get them where they want to go. When they get there, they have to have a cold place to basically hang out all summer. They enter the river before they reach sexual maturity. So they have to find that place to hang out while their gonads develop. And then they spawn in the fall, just like the fall run fish spawn in the fall, but they're typically geographically isolated from the fall fish because they come in earlier in the year. There's more water in the river, and so they can access different areas of the watershed. That all changed with the building of the dams, and that's the reason why there's this population is struggling. It's not because people want to eat them. It's because dams and diversions, poor timber harvest practices, these things have destroyed their habitat.
So, Craig, the way you describe the movements of the fall and spring runs, they never really come in contact with each other, certainly in freshwater.
That's not a hard and fast rule, but generally speaking, you're right. They're isolated populations. And it's sort of a trick by Mother Nature. You know, you enhance the chances of that long-term survival of Chinook salmon if some of them use the high reaches of the watershed, some are using lower reaches of the watershed. You know, these fish survived millions of years. They survived volcanic eruptions and recovered from it. So it's just a survival strategy for the species to last throughout time.
We've referred to the UC Davis work as Miller's work. Let's give him full credit. What's his first name?
Dr. Michael Miller, and his postdoc working with him is Dr. Daniel Prince. And it's their work really is rewriting our understanding of the evolutionary history of salmonids.
And we tried to get them on, too, but they are unavailable at the moment. Joshua Saxon, the Karuk and the fish have certainly kept company for thousands upon thousands of years. I mean, so here you have the scientific stuff, but, I mean, you probably had lots of stories that indicated these are very different fish already, traditional knowledge.
Yeah, we you know, one of the components of that first salmon ceremony is this idea that the salmon aren't really salmon until after that ceremony is completed, and we called them something completely different in our language until after that ceremony was complete, and then there was another word for them after that. And so yes, there's a huge significance to this run of fish for us and for other tribes as well.
In requesting a listing for the Klamath River spring run of Chinook salmon under the Endangered Species Act, can you or will you make the case for specific changes that you think will help the fish populations recover?
Yes, absolutely. I think there's, you know, we have an ESA listed, two or three ESA listed species in the Klamath Basin right now, and the kind of those listings force agencies to manage things differently, whether it's the BOR and the water project, or NOAA fisheries, or any kind of forestry practice on the forest or that affects the river. These kinds of things need to be taken into consideration in terms of the ESA listings, and so much of those kind of management practices have been basically directed at coho salmon, and if sometimes those things benefit spring Chinook, and sometimes those management practices are detrimental to spring Chinook. So this is going to add another layer of sound management and conservation practices to our basin, which is what is desperately needed for these fish.
So let me have that again. So you can actually make some corrections for the coho that might have a detrimental effect on spring run Chinook?
That's correct. They come in, coho come in the system in the late fall, early winter, whereas spring Chinook come into the system in the spring and then over summer and then spawn during the time that coho are actually coming into the system.
Okay, so I can see how that would work one positive for one and negative for the other. Craig Tucker, given the numbers, the dismal numbers, you mentioned 110 spring run Chinook salmon in the river in the count last month versus 1,600 sometimes on previous counts. Given the numbers, I mean, is it not too late? to make this listing? Do you think it's still something can happen?
Well, the numbers have been bouncing around between somewhere around 100, 150, upwards to about 1,600 for about 25 years. So we think if we give these fish a chance, you know, we always say unbuild it and it will come. So we're very optimistic that the removal of the lower four Klamath dams, which is slated to begin in 2020, is going to be a signal to spring Chinook that their time has once again come. And we think these will be the fish that start to recolonize the upper basin over the years. And we'll be studying the possibility of using some kind of maybe a conservation hatchery in the upper basin to sort of jumpstart this population. A very interesting finding in Dr. Miller's lab is in Modoc Indian sites, village sites in the upper basin, they recovered clay jars with salmon bones in them. And they were able to extract the DNA from these salmon bones, and six out of the eight samples they analyzed were from spring-run Chinook salmon. So we know those fish are up there. We know they have it in them to go up there. And if we can just give them half a chance, we think they can recover. And the goal for Karuk is not to have these fish on the endangered species list, but to have them in smokehouses.
All right. So the four dams we're talking about are J.C. Boyle, Iron Gate, Copco 1, and Copco 2, the four major dams on the Klamath, and work moving ahead to remove those. What's the paperwork process like from here, Joshua Saxon?
Well, we're in a 30-day notification process to both the states of California and Oregon, notifying them that the tribe and the Salmon River Restoration Council are going to file a petition to list the Klamath River Spring Chinook as its own species, and the endangered versus threatened. That'll be worked out through the administrative process. But basically, once we file our petition, then NOAA Fisheries will be taking some time to review that. I'm not sure what the timeline is on that. It's usually 8 to 12 months that they will review and then make their decision. And then based on what their decision is, then the tribe will have to work with our partners to decide what we're going to do next. If they deny the petition, then we'll be forced into a decision to either litigate that decision or live with that decision. If they decide to list it, then obviously there's a process where we would work with the agencies in terms of how that works itself out.
Okay. ESA work never fast. Joshua Saxon and Craig Tucker from the Karuk Tribe, thanks so much.